Hare Krishna. I am very grateful to be among all of you in this holy place of Gita Nagari. Srila Prabhupada came here with a great eagerness to see one of his most cherished and significant desires being executed. When he first established Krishna consciousness, and even before, he wrote his ideas of how to fulfill the instruction that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had given him on a simple little rooftop in Calcutta in 1922. He told Abhay Charan that you should bring the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the whole world in the English language. That seed was planted in his heart, and he continued to water it through the decades. He was helping various projects in Allahabad, in Kolkata, in Mumbai, Mayapur Dham, and ultimately in 1965 he came to the West. And one of the foundational pillars of the society he wanted to create was to develop self-sufficient farm communities, to demonstrate how to receive the blessings of Mother Earth with gratitude, dignity, and devotion. Knowing that Bhumi Devi is the expansion of Lakshmi or Sri Radha within this material world, and she is a consort of the Lord. And whatever Sarva Loka Maheshwaram in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells that he is the proprietor of everything that exists. And Mother Earth, recognizing that, provides every single plant, tree, fruit, flower, even nourishes all the various species of life as an offering to Krishna. And we as her children should utilize the gifts that she has with gratitude as offerings to Krishna. You see, from the perspective of bhakti, living an eco-friendly life is not just to make the world a healthier place for our generation and the future, although that is a part of it. But that happens naturally. when we understand the essence. The essence is, it is an essential part of our devotional service. There is a famous story where Srila Prabhupada, he was walking, I believe it was Mayapur, with many of his international leaders. They were walking through some fields, and they were showing him new construction, new agriculture, all these different ideas, plans, and developments. Srila Prabhupada pointed his cane into a field and said, "Can you not see?" They looked and they just saw a field. He raised his voice, "Can you not see?" And they were looking. Nobody said anything. He said, "Can you not see?" And some of the devotees were thinking, maybe he's seeing Krishna. But we can't see Krishna. We just see a field. And Srila Prabhupada walked into the field and went to a water outlet that was dripping water and tightly turned it off. And he said, "Everything is Krishna's energy. We should not waste anything." And then he said, "That is Krishna consciousness. To actually be conscious that everything is the property of Krishna. Whether it belongs to me or not, to honor that principle." So this type of community of self-sufficient farming and cow protection. Cow protection is a great pillar of Prabhupada's society, of Vedic society. The cow also is a mother. And her survival and happiness is completely dependent on the compassion of human beings. Krishna is Gopal, protector of cows. Govinda, one who gives pleasure to cows. He lives in Goloka, the planet of cows. Madhupati Prabhu is about to perform a fire yajna. And with hymns of devotion and beautiful mantras and prayers, he is going to be offering on behalf of everyone here our love and gratitude to Krishna in the sacred fire by offering ghee, the sacred offering of Mother Cow. And through the principle of cow protection, humanity understands a deeper conception, a wider perception of compassion. Krishna tells in Gita, Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam, that he is the best well-wishing friend and benefactor of all living beings. He doesn't say just Indians or Americans or Hare Krishna devotees or humans, all living beings. Krishna is the friend. as devotees, we're supposed to take this seriously. And we're supposed to be acting in his behalf in this world. If he's the friend of all living beings, we should be as instruments of his grace trying to be friendly to all living beings. Krishna was Gopal, but he also had buffaloes and other animals in his herds too. In other words, at initiation we take this vow, no eating of meat, fish, or eggs. Now fishes aren't cows, and chickens aren't cows. Why do we not eat them? Not just because it's a ritual of being Vaishnavas, because we're actually supposed to feel their pain. And we're supposed to feel their happiness. So these communities, these rural communities, have such a deep philosophical import that Srila Prabhupada wanted to present to the world. I remember years ago, decades ago, almost 40 years ago, I was living at New Vrindavan and I was taking care of cows. And Vishnujana Swami Maharaj, he would come so many times every year. He really loved to come there. In fact, he used to always say, as he was traveling around with Radha Damodar, he used to say, "I'm taking them in a bus all over America, but one of these days I'm going to build a temple for them at New Vrindavan and keep them there." But since I live in India, so I'm not so much connected to New Vrindavan, I have a neutral perspective of this these days. Radha Damodar wanted to be here by their will. But he used to tell us what he heard from Srila Prabhupada, that we're distributing books, we're preaching in colleges, we're doing all these programs, but we need these rural community as places where we could actually bring people to show them this is the life that we're talking about. So it is very important. And many years later, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, he came here. He understood Srila Prabhupada's heart in this regard. When Srila Prabhupada came here and walked with his holy feet upon the soils here, he gave so many instructions and inspirations. In 1977, before he was to depart from the world, he came in an extremely sickly condition physically to London. And he was on his way to visit Gita Nagari because he wanted to show how important these communities were. His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, with this passion for Prabhupada's compassion, he not only made this his base, but he chose to give up his physical life here. His samadhi which is just beside us. It was his will that his samadhi be put here. As a testimony of how important he felt this vision was. So I'm very grateful to be here with all of you. Special gratitude to the devotees at Kitanagari who are, through so many challenges, struggling to sustain, develop. Nothing great happens without struggle. That is a spiritual principle. Today, we are sitting at an initiation ceremony. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, brought this culture with its holy rituals from India to the whole world. A ritual is a form to express the intent and the devotion of our hearts. Just like I was with someone yesterday. He's a very well-known person. If you want to know who, you could ask me later. Well-known to some. He's about 85 years old now. And he said something that he learned in his life. He said, friends are like grass. We could learn a lot of Trinada Pisunichena. But he doesn't know that verse, actually. So we learn many things from grass. But what he said is, in relationships we have, our relationships are like grass. If you don't water the grass, you lose your relationship with the grass. In other words, a lawn needs the attention to water. And in the same way, we have to have a conscious effort to actually cultivate relationships in this world. I cannot tell you how many times in marriages a lady comes to me and says, my husband doesn't like anything I do. He has no appreciation. And I talk to the husband, I say, what is wrong? He says, no, I appreciate everything. I say, well, do you ever tell her? Do you ever thank her? And the common answer is, why should I do that? She should know. Saying thank you is a ritual. It's not just rituals or chanting mantras and putting ghee in fires and all of doing RTs. Everything we do, in one sense, is a ritual to express our intent. When we thank someone, when we appreciate someone, it's showing our love, it's showing our affection. God is a person. Krishna is the Supreme Person. And the essence of religion is to learn how to communicate with God, with our love, with our gratitude, with our devotion. So when they are offering archi to Radha Damodar,
if we're just getting paid to do it, which I don't think they do here, then it's just a job, off waving the lamps and waving the cloth and throwing the water.
But the actual intent is we're offering our heart's love. Incense is Mother Earth, Krishna. Earth is the source of fragrance. Water is the source of taste. Fire is the source of sight. Air is the source of feeling. Ether is the source of hearing, the atmosphere. So we're offering the basic elements back to Krishna with love and devotion. Krishna, you've given us these things, we are offering to you. And Prabhupada explains, Krishna does not accept everything we offer. Krishna accepts the intent in which it is offered, or the purpose in which it is offered. So this is the difference between an empty ritual and someone who's doing the exact same thing as a most sacred principle of pure yoga, pure religion, because it's offered with the heart. It's offered for the purpose of purifying our hearts and expressing our love and our gratitude to Krishna, to our gurus, to the Vaishnavas, to all living beings. And when we're all chanting together the mantras, doing yajna, or the fire sacrifice, we're the priest on our behalf is making offerings, and we are all participating, and we all become one in heart. If we're focused, we're all focused on offering these seeds and these mantras to the sacred fire. We become one.
Hare Krishna.
We become one in spirit, one in purpose. One in our desire to please Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas, they have taken the most powerful of all sacrifices of sankirtan and connected it to every other type of sacrifice. Yajyai sankirtanapriyaya janti hi sumedasa. Krishna appears in this age of Kali in a beautiful golden complexion, the Srimad Bhagavatam tells, with his associates. And they are teaching by their example how to worship the Lord through the congregational chanting of the holy names. And those with the finest intelligence will worship the Lord in this simple but most profound way. The Bhagavatam tells what after long durations of total focused meditation in Satya Yuga, what was accessible in Treta Yuga through yajnas that are performed with great precision and devotion. What was possible through meticulous temple worship in the Dwapar Yuga. Kevala Ananda Kanda can be easily and joyfully achieved in Kali Yuga simply by chanting Krishna's holy names.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So you will see, as we are doing the yajna, which is keeping us focused, we're all chanting together. Kirtan. It begins with kirtan. It's performed with kirtan. It concludes with kirtan. And we are united. Madhupati Prabhu led us in this verse that Srila Prabhupada would always recite before an event where there was the taking of vows. Om apavitra pavitro va sarvavastam gato piva yasmare pundarikaksham sabhaya vyantara suci. Whether one is pure or impure, or even having passed through every kind of situation in life, happiness, distress, honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, success, failure, health, disease, heat, cold. These things are always changing. Sometimes we feel like we're this far away from the Paramhamsa stage of being liberated saints. Sometimes we feel just a few more mantras and I'm almost there. And other times we feel, I don't even have a portion of a drop of real devotion to Krishna. I'm lifetimes away from any real devotional service. So we all go through these different experiences. It's the path. But this verse teaches us that whatever the situation we're passing through, we always remember Krishna. Because Krishna's pavitra, he's all pure. In our ups, in our downs, we take shelter of Krishna by hearing about him, by remembering him, by chanting his names, by worshiping him, by serving him, especially by associating with those devotees who make everything possible for us. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Prayag for 10 days instructed Srila Rupa Goswami on the banks of the river Ganga, Saraswati, and Yamuna, in the essential principles of devotional service. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began his discussion to Rupa Goswami by saying that the loving exchanges and the science and path of developing those loving exchanges between a devotee and Krishna, between Krishna and his devotee, it is like a limitless ocean. And Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself, is telling, I am going to try to describe one small portion of a single drop of that limitless ocean. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaking. Radha Bhava Suvalitam Nomi Krishna Swarupam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna with the Mahabhava of Sri Radha. Krishna is tasting Radha's love as Lord Chaitanya. And here is Lord Chaitanya, who is the ultimate supreme knower of Krishna, in the mood of Radha and saying his capacity of describing Krishna is to explain a portion of one drop from a limitless ocean of Krishna's qualities. Trinada Bisunichena. If we're actually making spiritual progress, we have to become humble. Otherwise, something's wrong. Because making spiritual progress means we're actually coming in contact with Krishna. And if we're really coming in contact with Krishna, we're really beginning to appreciate Krishna. We're really connecting to Krishna's mercy, Krishna's love, Krishna's qualities. Then we realize how insignificant we are. It is described that Krishna's qualities, Krishna's love, is like a limitless ocean. That means an ocean with no bottom and with no shores. We've never seen such an ocean. And yet, it is ever expanding through infinity. How is something that is limitless ever expanding? Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam. The absolute truth is perfect and complete. Complete means there's no room for anything else. Krishna is complete, but yet he's infinitely expanding at every moment. So the more we know Krishna, the more we understand, I don't know Krishna. But if we actually, by Krishna's grace, we can only know Krishna by his grace, not by our intellectual capacity, not by how many followers we have, not by how many verses we can recite, not by how much money we donate, not by how many cows we milk. We do this. We do all these things to get Krishna's grace, because it's only by that grace, through pleasing Krishna, that we could know him at all. And as we know him, we realize how great Krishna is. Achintya, beyond our capacity, inconceivable. So this is how Lord Chaitanya begins the teaching. That this is the science that we're talking about. And that little portion of one drop of Krishna's grace coming from the unlimited ocean, that little portion of a drop can actually flood the entire cosmic manifestation with ecstatic love. Shri Krishna Bhagavan Ki Jai. And he explained. And Rupa Goswami was asked by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to take these teachings, to expand upon them, to get the greatest of the scriptures of the world and extract the very essence from them, showing that pure love, prema bhakti, is the ultimate perfection and the original nature of the soul. Rupa Goswami gives this beautiful, progressive explanation of how bhakti works. Adoshatata sadhu sangota pajanakriya. At the beginning, there's a little faith. And from that faith,
which is usually due to some connection with the great personality in a previous life or earlier in this life, that little faith attracts us into the association of devotees, sadhu sangha. In that association, that little seed, the bhakti lata bij, begins to awaken. And then we're told, in that association of devotees, meeting our gurus, how to cultivate that seed by watering it and protecting it. Protecting it from stampeding elephants in the form of offenses to others. Protecting it from the weeds. Weeds that sometimes are so devious that they disguise themselves to look identical to the original creeper of devotion. The weeds of envy, anger, arrogance, the tendency to criticize and find faults with others. The weeds of recklessly thinking that we have the right and the power to break moral principles for our own gratification. Lust, envy, anger, pride, greed, illusion. Maya Devi is so powerful. Daivi heshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. That she could bring deadly weeds. If we water those reeds, they will gradually choke, strangle the creeper of devotion. And he's speaking to people who are devotees. When you come to the path of devotional service, be very careful. These weeds will come. We need that association to help us to discern. Because Maya is powerful. She will undoubtedly bewilder us, confuse us, deceive us, unless we humble ourselves to proper association and a very sincere attitude. Takes a lot of humility and determination. And these nine processes of devotional service, hearing and chanting, is bhajana kriya and nartanavritti. As we're performing our devotional activities, we're cleansing the unwanted things of the heart. And many of us have experienced that we never knew how many unwanted things were in our heart until we started practicing bhakti. Sometimes people come and they ask, "It seems that I'm getting worse." It's not that you're becoming worse. It's that you're beginning to understand and see what's always been there. It's just coming out. Just continue with the moral principles, with the character of a devotee, and continue hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord and serving the Lord. And gradually we become completely purified. Anartha Nivritti. And then there's nishtha, very, very firm faith. Can I give you an analogy? It's a personal observation. Last month, we were with a group of devotees in Jagannath Puri.
for the Ratha Yatra. Were any of you there? One. If you think it's hot here, this is like a very, very refreshing winter day compared to the way it was in Puri. Anyways, we had about 5 days of katha and kirtan, and it culminated with the Ratha Yatra. And according to the state of Odisha, on the street during the parade, there was minimum 1.2 million people. And the street's only a couple miles long. So it was quite exciting. But a couple days before the Ratha Yatra, I was sitting on the ocean side and I was watching the waves coming in early in the morning. This is about 5:30 in the morning. And Puri, sometimes there's gigantic waves. They're really coming in strong and heavy. And there's a massive undercurrent. If you go in the water, first you're crashed by a wave, and then you're pulled into the middle of the ocean. So most of our devotees just kind of, even these very powerful brahmacharis and these sadhus, very intellectual people and powerful athletes, and there were, you know, business people and students. 99% just lay in the sand and let the waves just crash them, and then they just hold on to the sand. Very few go in very deep because they know what might happen. So on this day, as I was chanting my japa, I said a little prayer, Jagannath, please, Jagannath Swami Nayana Patagami Bhavatume, please appear to me in whatever way you like, especially in lessons that will help me to improve my devotion. So as I was offering this prayer, I saw a group of fishermen. I learned a lot from these fishermen. Now understand, this is an analogy. They had their boats, each one fisherman for each boat. There was maybe about 5 or 6 of them. They all went together with their boats. And they're just little rowboats, one-man canoes. And they have fishing nets. And this is the way they survive. For them, it's not a sport. Sometimes Americans go fishing because I guess they just like to be bored or something. But, you know, like, poor little fish. But these people, it's their livelihood, so they're determined. So they're on the sand. The sand is like the shore of material existence. And Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, bhakti is like an ocean. Yes? And Adoshradha, they have some faith. And Sadhu Sangha, you know, their forefathers, their parents, you know, they've all give them the faith that if somehow or other they get out into the ocean, they'll get fish.
They have each other too. So they get in their little boat, and with that faith, they leave the shore. And as soon as they get out into the ocean a little, Bhajana Kriya, they start doing their service, their sadhana in this sense. They get out into the ocean and they're rowing Anartha Nivritti in the forms of waves. And oh, how they were struggling. These waves were, and sometimes it would knock them off the boat and they'd fall down, and sometimes the boat would turn over upside down. Sometimes it would hit them in the head. But they would just turn the boat back up and get right on it, and then another wave, and it's, they're going backward and going forward, and they're struggling and struggling. Sometimes the boats are bumping into each other, and the fishermen are bumping into each other, and it's not that they start fighting and scratching and biting each other. They just each, you know, haribo and get on their own boats. You know? And somehow or other, after all these challenges of determination and faith that they'll make it, and struggle, they get into a deeper part of the ocean where there's no waves. That's like nishta. When you get to that place in our sadhana where the anartha nivritti is, the anarthas are not banging like waves against us anymore. Where it's a calm, peaceful place, a firm, secure faith. Then they throw their nets in the water. Atashakti. Now they know everything's going to happen. They're going to get it. And then ruchi, that higher taste, is when they get their first little fishes. And after ruchi, atashakti, and then bhava and prema. And soon, they fill their boats with fish. It's like bhava. It's like their goal. And then I guess when they sell their fish and they make money, that's like their prem. It's an analogy. We don't support fishing. But Srimad Bhagavatam has us learning lessons from Pingala the prostitute and from moths who fly into fire. And from elephants and from deers, so we could learn. But practicing Krishna consciousness is like that. It takes faith. It takes strong association. It takes a tremendous amount of determination and sincerity to keep moving forward. Even when all those waves of our past conditionings and the waves of the impediments of material existence are exposed before us. But Lochan Das Thakur sings Kevala Ananda Kanda, that Lord Chaitanya gave a process where even going through the Anartha Nivritti stages is joyful. Chanting, dancing, feasting. That is why community is so important. Srila Prabhupada gave the example of the bundle of sticks. If you tie many sticks together, you cannot break any one of them. But if you take each one out individually, they easily snap. United we stand.
Because in this anartha nivritti, where the waves come, and in this case, some of the waves that Maya sends are like undercurrents. You don't see them coming. They just mystically, mysteriously, invisibly take you away from underneath to drown you. Weeds, deadly weeds that look like fragrant lotus flowers that are saying, please enjoy me. I will bring you to Krishna. Kevala Ananda Kanda, Sankirtan. But when we're actually developing a taste, when we're steady and regulated in chanting our rounds with the right intent, when we have a real, genuine, humble service attitude in whatever we do, when we nasta prayesha bhadreshu nityam bhagavate sevaya, when we regulate ourselves to hear Srimad Bhagavatam and actually develop ruchi, a taste for hearing about Krishna, when we're doing this together, when our communities are focusing our combined energies for these goals, for these higher principles, then we could pass through all these waves joyfully, happily. And then, when we actually taste Krishna, Srila Prabhupada taught us, then our greatest happiness is sharing that experience with others. And that's what he did. Srila Prabhupada traveled around the world about 12 times in just a matter of about 12 years. At such a late age, because he was so enthusiastic to relieve people of suffering and share with them this deepest, most profound spiritual experience of prem or ecstatic love for God. The very inherent nature of the soul. The only thing that is eternal is the soul and the soul's love for God. Beyond birth, beyond death. We appreciate it now theoretically, and we're striving to experience it. And part of the process of coming to that state of experience is committing ourselves to the path. That is what the initiation ceremony is. So I will begin the initiation lecture now. But it will be a very short lecture. Anyone could chant Hare Krishna. And God has many names. Anyone could chant the names of God. And Srila Prabhupada invited everyone to participate at whatever level a person was willing to progress toward. But for those who are very, very genuinely serious to make very deep spiritual progress, commitment is important. And that commitment is an individual commitment to the guru who's initiating us, to the shiksha gurus who are giving their lives to instruct us and inspire us, to our founder acharya Srila Prabhupada, who is the personality who is uniting all of us, whose teaching and mission we are all, whatever our positions, trying to serve. To all the previous acharyas, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Gorkishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, Baladev Vidya Bhushan, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivasacharya Shamananda Goswami, the six Goswamis, Sri Rup Sanatan, Raghunath, Raghunath Bhatta, Raghunath Das, Gopal Bhatta, Jiva Goswami, the Pancha Tattva, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Sri Vasudhi Gaur. Madhvacharya, Vyas, Narada Muni, and ultimately Krishna, the Jagat Guru. The original guru of all gurus is Krishna. So we are connecting to that flow of grace through a formal commitment. But the real connection is not the formality. As we have expressed Srila Prabhupada's world, the real commitment is our intent. Initiation is not just about getting a name and throwing some seeds in a fire and speaking some promises. Actual initiation is a thing of the heart, an actual willingness to dedicate ourselves. And also, it's a communal experience, a communal commitment, where we're all actually committing ourselves through our vows to accepting the help from each other and helping each other. Because we all know the nature of the mind. So many waves coming in the mind. Sometimes it's very peaceful waves. Sometimes they're tsunami waves. But we commit ourselves that no matter what happens, I'm going to follow these principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. No matter what may come, I'm going to chant my rounds. No matter what may come, I'm going to live in the spirit of a servant of the servant. And if we have that will, Krishna promises in Gita that he will preserve what we have and he will compensate. He will empower us with his own Shakti, wherever we lack, if we're sincere. Srila Prabhupada writes in Chaitanya Charitamrita that pure devotional service is very rare in this world. But Krishna will give it very easily for one who is sincere, for one who is serious.
and for one who has no ulterior motive. If we are sincere, serious, to keep moving forward with the right disposition, without ulterior motives, to actually value being a servant of the servant of the servant as the highest aspiration on the altar of our hearts. That is sincerity. And whatever we may have to lose or gain by striving for that, it doesn't matter. If a mother loves her child, she's not thinking about how much enjoyment or how much suffering she's getting by taking care of her child. She's just thinking about what she needs to do for the child. Is that correct, mothers? I'm a Swami. And that is how we should approach our devotional service. Because the commitments we make at initiation is very much how we are connecting a relationship with Krishna, with Srila Prabhupada. Would everyone like to recite the 10 offenses to the holy names? Everyone together? Hare Krishna. We should guard against these impediments, these offenses. I remember I was reading, I was reading a marriage lecture that Srila Prabhupada gave. It was back in the 1960s. And it was quite shocking when I first read it, because of the way I was kind of taught as a brahmachari. Srila Prabhupada said, because marriage is a time where there's vows taken. Srila Prabhupada said, the purpose of marriage is to be happy. That was shocking. I never heard it explained that way before. Mahara Devi, you don't remember hearing it explained that way.
Krishna consciousness is a process that if we actually do it right with the right association, we will be happy. But that takes a lot of commitment from all of us. We were discussing a mother. If a mother loves the child, the mother is happy even staying up all night for the child. Externally, she's suffering, but in her heart, she's happy because she's seeing the child is better. She's doing love. So when we're actually, this is why it's so important, hearing and chanting in the association of devotees, so that we're really connected to our purpose. And we're actually happy. So this is the great blessing that Srila Prabhupada has given to us in the form of this culture, this process of pure bhakti. Srila Prabhupada explained it was a scientific process. Scientific in the sense that there's a hypothesis, a philosophy, and then if we actually follow it, we can have direct perception, direct experience. Param drisva nivartate. Anandam buddhivardhanam pratipanam purnam ratasvadhanam. Of that happiness that we have all been searching for endlessly. Thank you very much. Thank you.